You're listening to the OCD Stories podcast, hosted by me, Stuart Ralph. The OCD Stories is a podcast dedicated to raising awareness and understanding around obsessive compulsive symptoms. I do this through interviewing inspired therapists, psychologists, and people who have experienced OCD. Welcome to the OCD Stories.
And welcome to episode 347. And in this one, I interview Chrissy Hodges. Now, Chrissy's been on the show several times, so many of you will be familiar with her. But if you're not, Chrissy is a peer support specialist, founder of OCD Game Changers, and author of the book Pure OCD, The Invisible Side of Obsessive Compulsive Disorder. She also won the Hero Award at the ISDF conference in 2017. Now, in this one, we discuss some of the physical symptoms of OCD, worrying about telling her therapist about the physical symptoms that were manifesting for her. We discuss the groinal, compulsions around these bodily sensations, disgust and shame, when checking compulsions make you feel and think you acted on a worry, and so much more. So thank you to Chrissy for coming on and discussing this topic with me.
And thank you to NoCD for supporting the podcast. NoCD offers effective and convenient therapy available in the US and outside the US. To find out more about NoCD, their therapy plans, if they currently take your insurance, or to download their free app, head to go.treatmyocd.com/theocdstories, or the link will be in the episode description.
And thank you to you guys, as always, for listening. I deeply appreciate it. And without further ado, here is Chrissy.
Welcome back to the show, Chrissy.
Hey, Stu. Thanks so much for having me on. It is always a pleasure.
Yeah, it's good to have you back on. So obviously, we're going to talk about a topic that you've noticed a lot recently, which is around physical symptoms and how it feels like it increases the risk when doing exposures. So yeah, a bit of background, I guess. Why this topic, and why is it something you're passionate about currently?
Well, when I first started doing advocacy many years ago, there really was a breakthrough in my advocacy when I started talking about the physical symptoms of OCD, probably back in 2016, when I first started kind of doing YouTube videos. I really felt as if I was conveying the experience of having OCD correctly when it comes to sexual, violent, intrusive thoughts, because that was typically what I was experiencing. But there was the component missing that not only made me feel as if I wasn't telling the whole story in advocacy, but when I was suffering with OCD, I was very scared to tell this part of the experience because I was afraid if I talked to my therapist about the intrusive thoughts were manifesting physically in my body, that he would say, well, if they're manifesting physically, that must mean that you don't have OCD. So as someone who was suffering before therapy, this was a really scary decision for me to confess, not in a compulsive way, but to confess to my therapist, okay, I'm going to tell you that I have these thoughts, but I also need to tell you that my groin moves when I have these thoughts. And I remember the debate in my head beforehand, and weighing the options of, is Dr. Phillipson going to say, well, I guess if you have physical feelings, this is an OCD? Or is he going to say, well, I guess if you have these physical symptoms, that means that you want the thoughts. Mm-hmm. And so at that time, I was pretty desperate for therapy. So it wasn't, I guess it wasn't a deal breaker for me because I knew I had to. So I tearfully told Phillipson what was going on, and he paused and went, oh, okay, well, we call that the groinal, yada, yada, yada. And then I cried. But so the risk paid off, and luckily I had a therapist that understood. But in translating that over to advocacy, I was scared to talk about it openly, as a lot of people are scared, because it is hard to express from an objective perspective. It's hard to understand intrusive thoughts in general, but it's even harder to understand someone telling you, when I have these thoughts, I feel arousal, or something that is that feels terrifying, like arousal, because that for people feels like the nail in the coffin of this is not OCD, it is intrusive thoughts. And there are a lot of implications because of that, that can be really negative, including not pursuing therapy, not talking to anyone about it, and really diving into your experience of OCD, wanting to believe it's OCD, but truly thinking this can't be if it's this physical. So it's become important to me, not only because of that experience with myself and how alone I felt in it. I was lucky to have a therapist that understood, but people will listen to videos and see things on social media, and they will think to themselves, that's great and all that all these people are talking about these intrusive thoughts, but I'm not like them because it manifests in my groin, or with health OCD, it manifests in my, you know, with pain in my head or my hands are shaky. And people really dig into that feeling of, I'm the one that doesn't have it because it's manifesting physically. So it's really important for us to talk about this, and there's not enough people talking about it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And of course, groinal, I think the term is arousal non-concordance, where the brain and the body are disconnected, in the sense of that in your example, you didn't want to be aroused. You know, it was egotistonic, it was taboo, it was whatever, but the body had a different idea. Mm-hmm. Whereas usually we think arousal, well, then I must want it, but not necessarily the case. Mm-hmm.
This can be prevalent with any intrusive thought or mm-hmm. not, because I know that people are listening going, I'm looking for the key.
Yeah.
But with the groinal in particular, I can't say this for everyone, but for me, normal arousal was arousal, subtle. It was a feeling. It was just something that occurred naturally. But the groinal syndrome alongside sexual intrusive thoughts felt like it was arousal times 1,000. And so with that, it's not something that you feel as if you could ignore. Mm-hmm. And so then you get caught up in the argument of, well, why would this feel so strong if it weren't true? Mm-hmm. Why am I not feeling this way when I am making out with my partner, but why am I feeling this when I'm on the street looking at other people, or with POCD when I'm looking at kids? So it becomes the argument of which is stronger. And of course, as soon as we get into that argument, it just exacerbates all the physical symptoms.
Yeah.
And you just get deeper into the argument, and it's hard to get out, and the shame around it is a huge barrier. The shame is the biggest barrier, I feel like.
Yeah, spot on. But I think with that, the example you were given there around arousal in the sense you were saying, like with your partner, that's one thing. And then this feels, groinal feels like times 1,000. Mm-hmm. But I guess with groinal, the distinction between groinal and with a partner is that with groinal, there's also going to be other feelings like disgust that maybe you're not going to get with your partner, hopefully. And if there is, maybe, you know.
Unless it's targeted at them.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, good point. But yeah, I guess there's other red flags, right? You know, it's mm-hmm. they kind of distinguish the two.
And I think it's important to know that when we label what a groinal is supposed to feel like or what's supposed to happen, many people will be listening to this and go, uh-oh, that's not what mine feels like. Mm-hmm. You know, people are really, when it becomes physical, when it manifests, I mean, the intrusive thoughts are hard enough. But when it manifests physically, you really do feel like the reassurance is necessary, because it is so terrifying. Once it manifests physically, it does feel like I've crossed this barrier into this cannot be OCD. And this is where a lot of times I see people who really then are willing to take the risk of, I'm going to type into the computer, you know, whatever their intrusive thoughts are, to get some reassurance, because when it becomes physical, it just becomes too scary.
Yeah. Yeah. Really good point. And of course, groinal can mean many different things. It can mean like full arousal, or it could mean like, I just feel a tingle there.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Or dreams, and it can manifest anywhere in the body, you know, for you, your mouth can water, your back end can feel interesting, you know, any erogenous zone anything. And mm-hmm. you know, it's the same thing for harm intrusive thoughts. People often talk about the physical manifestation of urges. So the feeling of losing control, or sometimes people will they feel like their hands are moving towards a knife, or they're, you know, I'm not going to be able to control myself putting my hands around someone's neck and strangling them. And then you start sweating, and then, oh my goodness, this is it, the adrenaline. So it's, and of course I want to make sure that we're including health intrusive thoughts. So where people get fixated on whether or not they have a specific health condition, and they start to focus solely on symptoms, that you can manifest these symptoms in your body, or symptoms that look or feel like the symptoms that you are focused on. And that is what this is all about, right? If I don't focus on my groin, then my groin's not going to move, or it might move, but if I give it relevance, then it's going to get stronger.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Good point. The more we focus on it, the bigger it's going to get. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, so you mentioned like, obviously the groinal physical symptoms of in-health anxiety. Are there any other sort of physical symptoms that come up in any of your groups?
I think that for any intrusive thought, for any type of OCD, anything can manifest physically. I think depending on what it is, and that's why I wanted to bring in relationships. And I think it's great that you use the term disgust. This is another thing that can manifest physically for people. If people are having intrusive thoughts of, am I with the right person, or am I attracted to my partner, they may start having focusing on what feelings of love should feel like, or what feelings of disgust feel like. You know, if we sit, you know, Sue, if you and I sit here long enough and focus on disgust, like we could start to manifest feelings of disgust, even if we, you know, started thinking about things that make us disgusted, which is often the comparison, right? That's mental review. So when we talk about the groinal, it's, oh my gosh, think back when I was aroused with so-and-so 5 years ago. Am I aroused now the same way with my partner now? What was, you know, so if I'm thinking about disgust, oh gosh, think of something really gross. Do I feel the same way about my partner? So the physical symptoms can manifest in any way if you are trying to pinpoint some sort of emotion or some sort of just right feeling. And again, the more we focus on that, the more elusive the answer actually is. And then the more we spiral into that hopelessness. And that's really one of the reasons why I wanted to talk about this today, is the degree of hopelessness people feel when they are stuck in the physical aspects of OCD, and the impact that has on people and whether or not they are going to pursue therapy or are successful in therapy. Because I think our community can get very fixated on, well, if you want to be in recovery, just do the work. And we see that all the time. It is not that easy. And these are some of the reasons why. And I know, and all the therapists listening to this are going to be like, oh, I hate it when she says this, but whatever. But I know that we don't want to talk about emotions when it comes to behavioral therapy. I realize that. But if these are some of the things, the components of the OCD experience that are hindering people from getting better, we need to start talking about them. We need to come up with solutions. We need to see what is going to help people over this barrier. I know for me, understanding that other people feel that way and getting that one-on-one peer support, group support, can help motivate people to go, okay, that's right, so-and-so feels the same way, and they advanced in therapy, so can I. You know, but what can we do when these things are coming up and they become barriers? Because we can't say to people, "We'll come back to therapy when you're ready." And you know, what we're really saying to people is, when it gets so bad that you cannot manage anymore, then I'll be ready to do therapy with you. Yeah. That's not fair.
No, not at all. And you know, as a therapist, like, I want my OCD clients to, if they have groinal or any physical symptoms with health, anxiety or anything else, to be honest and to share that with me, because then we can address it, I can normalize it, and we can target it and work with it. But when it's not in the room, it can't be worked on, you know? And obviously they've got to feel comfortable. But for a lot of people, we'll feel shame. So how do you, in your groups, that, I guess, encourage them to take that risk? And I say risk because that's what it is and it feels like, to share with their therapist.
Well, one of the things that I feel is special about my position as a peer support is I am able to ethically share my lived experience in an effort to walk alongside someone and help with motivation and empowerment in their own recovery. So being able to set the tone in a group or set the tone with clients when I work with them, just by sharing my own story without shame, and also as a kind of this beacon of, okay, this person had the groinal 24/7 and now was able to get help and is better. That really does sometimes lay the pathway for people to say, to really say, someone has already walked this, so I can walk it too. And I'm willing to walk alongside them and support them as well. So in group, being able to break the ice, and you know how I am, I just will talk about anything that is there just isn't a holds bar with the OCD experience, because there shouldn't be. We should be able to talk about, I know it's embarrassing, and I know people a lot of times don't want to talk about it because they're scared about the backlash from the public or whatever. But when we're community focused, people need to know how this can manifest in every possible way. So being able to lay that out for people in a group setting, really the parameter is already set. So people feel very safe inside of that. So they can say, well, I experienced this, and they don't have to look at everybody in the group going, oh my gosh, are they judging me? You know, it's already out there. And so what that does is to have the support of a certified peer support specialist, plus now all of your peers in the group, you feel confident to go to a therapist and say, hey, I need to tell you what's going on. I need to tell you this. And this is what I discovered in group. And they can even say, and then, you know, the seven other people have it too. And so if the therapist doesn't know about it, maybe they will learn something. I hope they would know about it, but you never know. I mean, new therapists that are learning how to treat OCD probably do have to learn from their clients, because the clients have done so much research for reassurance.
Yeah, well, absolutely. You know, I've done this podcast for so many years, and sometimes clients will say stuff and I'm like, oh, I haven't heard of that. I'll research it and I'll be like, oh yeah, it is a thing in OCD. There's a study on it, or, you know, so yeah. But yeah, I think there's something in that of like, bring in an article or maybe this podcast, or say, hey, here's my evidence. And it's not to say they're not going to believe you, but it helps educate them if they're unaware of it.
Yes. Well, and it also creates a safety net, because again, let's go back to, what is the client afraid of? What are individuals in OCD afraid of? Yeah. They're afraid that the physical symptoms mean it's not OCD.
Yeah. I mean, that they're a bad person, or
it's as simple as that. And so if that is what, even though like, you know, when Dr. Phillipson was like, oh, okay, that's the groinal, let me blah, 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 blah. It didn't stop the groinal, but it certainly helped me feel safe in a space where I knew now I could disclose anything and Phillipson wasn't going to flinch. And we all know that working with people in the OCD community is that you have to be very mindful of your reactions of things.
Yeah.
You know, leave all your judgment at the table. I mean, I would hope that every therapist and every person in this profession would be trauma-informed enough to know that. Because people who with OCD especially are looking for the reaction, because they are really scared it's not OCD and that this is real. It all comes back down to that.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me just look at my questions.
I have a couple things.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Really
go
wanted to touch on. First, I wanted to talk about this is a tricky topic, but it's so, I feel as if it's really important to touch on, because this is another barrier that people get stuck in with shame. And there's two things. The risk of telling someone that they have engaged a compulsion that makes them feel like they have acted on the thoughts. There's a couple ways I wanted to talk about this barrier, which is individuals with OCD scared they have acted on the thoughts, scared they have taken an action, and that means it is no longer OCD, and they either subconsciously want the thoughts or they want to act on them. And this, a lot of this is driven on the information out there that says, if you have OCD, you will never act on the intrusive thoughts. That is great. And I think it's, I think it's awesome that it reassures 95% of the community, but that 5% of people are suffering badly because they took that statement so to heart. And now they are bogged down in this fear that they have acted on it. So let me give you a couple examples.
Yeah.
And these are things that specific things I hear from clients, from people in groups that really become a barrier for people. People may engage in a checking compulsion. So these are just examples. And what they might do, let's say, for instance, they may have POCD. So POCD is the intrusive thoughts about being or becoming or turning into a pedophile. So what happens is, if you have compulsions about this, you are constantly testing yourself of, oh my gosh, would I like this or would I not like this? Avoidance becomes a huge compulsion for people. So one of the things someone might do is, okay, today I'm going to my niece or nephew's birthday party and I'm going to pick up my niece and hug her. Right. And what then that becomes is a compulsion, a checking compulsion. Okay. I'm going to pick up my niece, because that is what you would do typically, is pick up your niece on her birthday and hold her and hug her. Right. No, mm-hmm. If you didn't have intrusive thoughts, most people would do that if they are comfortable hugging. And so what happens is someone will make that decision, have the anxiety go, and there'll be a checking process. Oh my goodness. Is everything seems okay? Am I touching this kid in the right place? Am I having a groin? Am I having this? Put the kid down. And then this rush of, uh-oh, I just acted on the thoughts. What does that mean about me? And now, to the layperson that doesn't have OCD, you may be listening to this and going, that's stupid. But for someone who is entrenched in intrusive thoughts day in and day out, worried they are going to do something wrong or worried that something's going to happen to prove that these thoughts are real, something like that can be devastating, because then the obsession becomes, what was my intention? Did I want to do that? What person would do that? Did I? And then you can't pinpoint the feeling of why, when in reality, if you had a camera outside watching, you would just see someone come in and hug their niece and put them down. When this person's going through absolute hell of, I just acted on my thoughts. And so then you get behind this big wall and you're not allowed in the community anymore because you acted on them. See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That is a big barrier. So there's something like that. There's also having sex.
Oh, and just to quickly clarify, for the other 95% you may have triggered by saying some people act on it. The 5% never acted on it, but in their head, the OCD is saying, what if you just acted on it based on you checking? And
So the premise is, acting on the thoughts is in the eye of the beholder.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. So when someone says acted on, another example. Someone has sexual orientation OCD, they may go, is this OCD or is this healthy sexual exploration? I don't know. So maybe if you identify as gay and you are worried that you're straight, you know, maybe I'll go out with a straight person to check. Mm-hmm. So that's a compulsion, but it also can be looked at as, oh my goodness, I acted on it.
Yeah.
So that must mean the intrusive thoughts are real. But did they act on it? I mean, not acted on in the way that we are fearing.
Yeah.
The compulsion then becomes distorted in a way of, now I've done it. You know, with OCD, it's interesting. We're always kind of looking for this way out. And then there's always the, oh my God, if only I hadn't have done this, now it's doomed forever. Mm. And this particular concept of acting on really does make people feel like now it's over. Mm-hmm. Now I can't come back. I won't be able to come back from this. I will always remember that I acted on. So understand, if you're listening, what I'm saying about acting on, it is what you are perceiving as acting on, kind of up against that quote that says you will never act on your intrusive thoughts for OCD.
I think there's something in there as well for therapists of being mindful not to push people too far. That's going to lead them into that place you're talking about of overstepping values and going to a point where their brain can't comprehend whether this, you know, what's just gone on.
Yes, I think that's an important point, because that is also a place where people get stuck even while they're in therapy. So thank you for bringing that up. Doing some of the exposures may then feel like they're acting on it, even if it's part of a plan in front of their face. Hmm. This is what you're going to do this week, and you're going to do this, you know, 20 times at this time of day. It doesn't matter if someone is in the mind frame of, will I be able to move on after doing, how will I be able to forgive myself? How will I be able to, especially if someone has not gotten to the point in exposure response prevention where they kind of have that behavioral moment of, oh, this isn't about the intrusive thought, it's only about the anxiety. If you haven't gotten to that point, mm-hmm. and you're pushed really hard on exposures, and in particular, if they're about loved ones, then the question becomes, how will I ever move on after this? How will I forgive myself? Okay, I want to get better, but I'm going to say it, could the trauma of this experience be worth it? Mm-hmm. If I can't ever get over having to do these things and feeling like I acted on them.
Yeah. Were there any other points you wanted to bring up on this? You said you had a couple.
Yeah. So the other thing, another example of the acting on, because I think it's important to have different examples so people know where I'm coming from on this, is when the groinal syndrome, definitely for sure, if anybody or if a person is experiencing physical symptoms in an erogenous area in their body as a result of intrusive thoughts, then sometimes people, well, first of all, we do know that OCD can really disrupt people's libido and their sex life, their ability to feel aroused, because then they become confused, or depression really does interfere in, you know, wanting to have sex or the desire. And then, you know, throw in the confusion of, what am I attracted to? Because my groin is moving to this, but I know I'm not. That can be really bad. But when people are then what happens is when people are avoiding sex, and it would or masturbation, and it would normally be part of their everyday world, or it's something they enjoy, and, you know, they're encouraged to continue to do these activities, right? To continue, it's important to me, it's important to my relationship. But the fear of, I had a groinal today, and if I have sex, that means I'm acting on it. Or I'm triggered about, in POCD, if I have sex, the chance of intrusive thoughts coming in while I'm having sex are probably prevalent. So does that mean I'm acting on it and I want the intrusive thoughts and that the thoughts are real? Again, it always spirals back down to, does that mean I really want the thoughts and I don't have OCD? Yeah. So, sex and pleasure, self-pleasure and all of that can factor into this acting on too. You know, and also people, many people, well, not, I mean, I don't want to say many because I don't have any statistics or anything, but I hear often, and it's rarely talked about, where people will have the compulsion to masturbate or have sex, of course, or watch porn, you know, just to get some sort of relief from the groinal or from those physical symptoms. And the shame for people that comes after that, then, because really, and what they are experiencing is compulsion, right? I want to get rid of this feeling. It's, I want to just get this. And then it's, oh my goodness, I acted on it.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's the same as, you know, worrying that you're going to stab your partner in the kitchen and there's a knife and you go, I'm just going to pick up the knife and check. Well, I picked up the knife and put it down. Oh my God, I acted on it. I took one step closer to killing my partner. Right. Well, did you? Or did you just, you know, if there's a camera in your kitchen, or did you, does the camera show you just picked up the knife and put it down?
Yeah.
Right. So this is such a deep topic that is so shameful. It's almost like the extension of the physical side of OCD that is the dark side. That no, it's behind the big iron wall. And that iron wall is, if you act on your intrusive thoughts, you don't have OCD. And so then people get fixated on, I think I acted.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Even though the example that comes to my mind is you're having sex, for example, because it's meaningful to you and you want to connect with your partner, or you just want to have your jollies. Either way, like, there's nothing wrong with that. That's perfectly normal and fine. But then you get a taboo intrusive thought midway through this healthy sex act. And then you're trying to show your brain irrelevance. You keep going anyway, because you don't want to give in to these thoughts and feelings. And then at the end is, why did I continue? Is that my bad person because I continued? But no, actually, it's a therapeutic choice to continue, because that's what's going to show your brain irrelevance. But the brain may then creep in and be like, yeah.
And that is the perfect example of someone then going to, oh no, that means I acted on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's, again, acting on is in the eye of the beholder. Did you, or did you continue a values-based activity that brings you and your partner joy, or, you know, you, if you're self-pleasuring, right?
Yeah.
And so it is, when I think about that, and when I talk to people that have gone behind that iron wall, I mean, it devastates me because it is so shrouded in shame and guilt. These different examples, because the fear becomes so big. I mean, think about it. It's already big. The fear is already big to ask a therapist or tell a therapist, my groin is moving or this is happening. But then to counteract something that you may have seen on the internet that says, oh, if you do this, blah, 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 blah. Then you really are taking a big risk of the therapist going, oh, you acted on it. So that means you don't have OCD. Instead of understanding, you know, this is just part of your compulsive cycle and you're okay.
Yeah.
I'm so grateful when people tell me, you know, take the risk and tell me that they experience this, so I can validate that, oh, this is so normal. And they're like, what? It can't be normal. No one's talking about it. Well, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's it. And yeah, definitely since I've been in advocacy, there's a lot more people talk about groinal in particular. I know we focused largely on that today, not the other symptoms, but definitely groinal. Obviously, you've been a big push for that in your YouTube videos and stuff. But yeah, it is getting, and most OCD specialists should be aware of it. And if they're not, as soon as they read it, they'll get it. But yeah, maybe in the wider therapeutic community, it's probably something that needs to be understood. Oh, right.
I mean, it's, again, it from an objective perspective, if someone just happened to stumble on this podcast and they're listening to me talking about my groin firing at intrusive thoughts, they're probably like, ooh, she needs to get in psychoanalysis immediately. Not that there's anything wrong with psychoanalysis at all, but you know what I mean? If yeah. people don't understand that they can go hand in hand, and like Phillipson's reaction was of, oh, okay, that's just the groinal. Let's go. The amount of confidence in the non-hesitation mm-hmm. and the normalization in my motivation to get therapy, it just skyrocketed because I knew that my therapist was now on the same page as me.
Yeah.
Is it reassurance? Hell yeah. But sometimes it's not reassurance, it's assurance. Sometimes yeah. we need that assurance that what we are experiencing does not make us a monster. We do.
Yeah, it's assurance and education. And if you keep asking him if it's groinal, then it's reassurance.
Oh, he wouldn't have answered again. Yeah. I probably did too. Are you sure? And he's like, well, I don't know now. No, he didn't say that, but I hope he doesn't listen to this, because every time I get around him now, whatever I say triggers me, he likes to announce to the world.
Brilliant. So is there anything else on this topic you wanted to share before we move on?
Yes. Lastly, and I think this will tie in very nicely with what we have been discussing, is I think the physical, I do believe that when people are experiencing intrusive thoughts, especially if they've been in, not that I'm distinguishing one intrusive thought over the other, but when they have been experiencing intrusive thoughts that are shameful or taboo, and they have not told anyone out of fear of, and as we know, and if you follow any of my advocacy, you know, I usually use taboo intrusive thoughts as an example, because when society deems your intrusive thoughts as horrible and bad, and just the word is inflammatory. So pedophilia, incest, bestiality, necrophilia, things like that. Mm. If the society deems it bad, then you're backed into a corner even more on the risk of exposing those intrusive thoughts to someone, not only your loved ones, because your loved ones are still part of a society that has a backlash against those, you know, even those words.
Yeah.
So the risk becomes really great on finding out you're a horrible person and you're a monster and this is an OCD and you're just, you know, it's, you should be exiled from society or mm-hmm. or whatever. But when you have physical symptoms around these intrusive thoughts, the risk almost becomes too great. Mm-hmm. Especially if it's geared towards other people. And I wanted to bring this to light because I feel like there's a portion of the community that feels left out when they are experiencing a risk that is in the physical symptoms, manifestations of OCD that are so great that they feel like, again, like we mentioned, doing therapy work regardless, or even talking to a therapist, is going to be too much for them to bear. And even admitting I'm having mm-hmm. intrusive thoughts about someone I love. So in particular, I'm talking about POCD. Mm-hmm. So when a parent has intrusive thoughts about their own child, right? Mm-hmm. Or another family member, or just someone that they love, you're not weighing the risk of getting better, because this is what we want the OCD community to perceive. What's the risk? Do ERP, you know, do treatment, get better, you know, do ACT, you know, get better. The risk is, let's go a little bit deeper in that risk. You know, we're not only talking about someone's recovery, because that person is not thinking about their recovery. They're thinking about their child. Mm-hmm. That these thoughts are directed toward. They're thinking about their spouse and the fact that they have to do exposures towards the child. What is my spouse going to think about me? What if this damages the child? What is the risk? Am I acting? So to a degree, when we're getting, and you know, I'm not making excuses for everybody and why that they're not doing therapy. So understand, if you're listening to this, understand that. What I'm doing is let's start exploring some of these deeper issues that are causing people to say, I am not going to do therapy because I'm too afraid of the risk. Now, if you're an outsider, you may go, but there is no risk because the thoughts aren't real. But this is wraps this whole point up in a bow right here. They feel too real to just accept that the risk isn't great enough. And it's so important for us to understand that. And to a degree, it's a trauma-informed approach toward this. We've got to believe people when they say, I cannot do this because the risk is too big. Don't turn away and say, well, I guess then you just don't want to get better. What? That's not the case. What it is they are so scared that there's going to be so many more extensions of how awful they feel about themselves if they are going to engage in exposures or if they're engaging in compulsions. Yeah. So it's and this can be just a little personal experience too. You know, I am always a physical manifester of symptoms, which sometimes, and I think that this is why I get this topic so much. Sometimes the physical manifestations make my experience of OCD suffering longer before I realize it's OCD, because I have such a hard time distinguishing between or in believing that it's actually OCD because it feels so real. And this has always been the case ever since I was 8 years old. And recently I had a bout of OCD that was very acute about rabies. And the, it's a long story. Just go to my YouTube channel if you want to hear more about raccoons, but I won't get into it. But either way, I was triggered by rabies. Okay. And the outcome of rabies is death. And anyone knows it, right? You don't mess around with rabies. Did I have rabies? No. Or maybe I do. I don't know. I am in the,
frothing at the mouth.
I am in the gray zone of maybe I do, and I only have a couple more months to live. But at the time, I could, as a person that considers myself in recovery, I was sitting there on the worst day of this spike. I was sitting there going, I know this is OCD because I can see all of the compulsions. Okay. I can see them. I'm ruminating. I'm stuck. I'm avoiding. I'm in the house. I'm on the phone with my support system going, get up and get outside. Like they could see it too. But the risk, and this was a really eye-opening moment for me, was to be able to see just how big the risk was. You know, everything you read on the internet is go to the doctor immediately. And there were a lot of reasons why I did it. But the risk was so great that I just chose to do compulsions. Does that mean I'm not in recovery? I mean, some people might say yes, but I don't care. At the time, I had to obey that risk. And there was a moment where I just thought, wow, this is what it feels like. I've forgotten how big this feels. And then it spiraled down into the, you are irresponsible. You're a horrible person. If you do get rabies, you're going to be made an example of blah, 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 blah. And I couldn't control those things in the storm of the spike. But in reflection, you know, a week out or whatever, I could look back and say, holy cow, I understand now why, you know, I literally had people on the phone saying, what can you do for ERP right now? I was like, I'm choosing not to do ERP. The risk is too big. The risk is too big today. Mm-hmm. Eventually I did.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that is a testament to walking through an experience like that with someone until they're in a position where they're ready. And typically that takes a great deal of support, empathy, compassion, and understanding that other people experience this too, have walked this path before. And if you know that the path is there, then you are able to see that and feel the motivation to do it yourself and know that you will be able to live with yourself at the other side.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Compassion is a huge one on this topic. Yeah. And hopefully therapists will do a lot in that area first before trying to go down ERP mm-hmm. route. And also ACT, you know, workability, psychological flexibility. Anyway, thank you for that. And what's interesting is when I wrote my questions earlier, I usually do like if you pick up the phone and call your 20-year-old self. I actually wrote the 8-year-old self, and you mentioned your 8-year-old self just now. Mm-hmm. So there you go, serendipity. So if you could pick up the phone and call the 8-year-old you in Georgia, what would you tell her?
Escape to Colorado now. No. Oh my goodness.
I was gonna say that's a weather comment and not a political one, right?
Yes, that is all about the weather.
Good.
If anyone knows me personally, they know how much I despise the heat and the humidity, which is why I live very far in the mountains. If I could phone up my 8-year-old self, man, you know what I would tell her? I would say, I believe you. Mm-hmm. Nice. I believe that this is real. Because that's what the 8-year-old Chrissy needed. Mm. And 15-year-old and 20-year-old Chrissy needed that too. Sometimes 45-year-old Chrissy. But I would be that secure attachment for mm-hmm. that 8-year-old. And I would say, I believe you. And what you're experiencing is real. Mm. Yeah. And I love you. And who cares if you ruminate? And lots of people are going to think you're loud, but people will love you anyway.
Nice. I like it. Okay. So you've got a billboard in Colorado or Denver. What do you want written on that billboard?
Stu, I should have thought about these questions. I have a billboard, and what do I want it? I would probably just put, does your groin move? And then I would put a link to my YouTube channel.
Nice.
Really? I mean, what I think sometimes, because the thing that worries me the most about this, all of this, is how many people are too scared, are having physical symptoms. And they are dying. We'll never know the accurate suicide rate for OCD because we will never, there is not enough information for people to know they have a chance. Mm. But we're never going to know how many people were too scared to type into the computer, or because when physical symptoms happen, the risk becomes too big. Of the humiliation. And so I've always thought to myself, so maybe this is not a billboard, but even bigger. I've always wished at like the Super Bowl or something, I could afford a quick commercial that just said, if you're having thoughts about X, Y, Z, and list them all off and be like, you might have OCD. Here's a link to get help. Boom. Nice. Can you imagine how many people we would help?
Yeah, a lot.
I mean, people would see it and they would go, oh, I've been thinking that for 10 years. Who is this person? Right. And then they would know. And then they would have the courage to Google, because the courage would be, there's going to be something on the other end of this computer that is not going to say that I'm a monster. So that would be my billboard. But it would have to be during like the Super Bowl or something big.
Or yeah, well, looking at the Super Bowl costs, it's about $7 million.
Okay, let's do it. Let's raise $7 million, people. Let's do this. Game changers will
crowd,
do
it. Crowdfunding. Yeah. Yeah. Lastly, anything else you wish you could have said or shared today?
I will think about what I could have shared later on today, but In looking at my notes, I think I wanted to, or I think I did hit on all the topics. I do want to say, you know, thank you to everyone who's listening, you know, for having the open mind and the compassion and empathy to hear what I'm saying. I know that it is a relatively new concept in any mental health community to combine or to focus on, you know, recovery oriented, you know, the recovery model over the medical model. I know that as someone who's worked in the system for many years, I understand that. So it sometimes can feel counterproductive to take lived experience and have that be a part of the therapeutic process. But as someone who's done peer support for individuals with OCD now for years and in one-on-one capacity and group capacity, it's just people, especially with this illness and the ego dystonic nature of the confusing nature of it, it is so important to acknowledge someone's lived experience and to approach it with empathy and validation. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of times we are afraid that validation is reassurance. And it is not. Mm-hmm. People need to know it is okay that what they are experiencing is OCD and very similar to what other people are experiencing with OCD. That in itself is a motivator. It's a game changer. It helps give hope, and it helps people to understand that they do not have to walk alone. They are not the only one on this path, and that many people have walked before and are walking alongside them.
And we'll walk after them.
Absolutely.
Yeah, good way to end. So thank you, as always, for sharing, and especially on this topic. Appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me, Stu. And I appreciate you hitting, you know, a lot of the topics that our community needs to hear that can really help keep advancing how we're treating people and supporting people toward recovery. So you're such an integral and important part of this community. So thank you.
Thank you for listening to this week's podcast. If you enjoy the OCD Stories podcast and would like to support us with a one-time tip/donation, please go to theocdstories.com/support. All tips, no matter how large or small, are greatly appreciated. Please subscribe and rate the show wherever you listen to the podcast.
And thank you to NoCD for supporting our work. And if you want to find out more about NoCD,
head to go.treatmyocd.com/theocdstories or click the link in the episode description. And quick disclaimer, guys, this podcast is not therapy. It is not a replacement for therapy. Please seek treatment from a trained professional. And until we speak, take care.